Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by DragonPay. DragonPay is the pioneer in alternative payments in the Philippines. DragonPay is the reigning fintech of the year in last year's Philippine Fintech Festival. Sign up now at www.dragonpay.ph.
So basically, our mission is really to help our buyers manage thousands of suppliers at the same time. We want Sourcy to become the official seller of record. And as long as you're buying from Sourcy, you know that it is of high quality and it has a good price.
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of Hustle Share Podcast. I'm super excited because we have a fellow investee of the Fox Month Mafia, right? Who's then able to... I've been to a lot of FoxMon events, but I'm not sure if we've gotten to meet each other in person. And if we have, it was probably in passing, right? Apologies for that. You probably don't remember me as much. But before I get carried away, let's welcome to the show the founder and CEO of Sourcy, Mr. Carl Chen. Woo-hoo! Carl, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, again, big fan. Shout out to Bea of Fox One for letting this happen. Because again, super easy to get guests when you have amazing ecosystem to refer you amazing guests as well. But dude, before I get carried away and then go digress left and right, I need to ask you the $1 million question. Carl, what's your hustle?
Yeah, my hustle is Sourcy, right? And Sourcy, what we do is we help brands and retailers discover, source, and have the product delivered to their warehouse, right? Oh. And we aim to do that in the shortest time at the lowest cost with the least hassles. That's what we do.
That is amazing. So again, Sourcy, really, this is the lifeblood of a lot of businesses. And if you really are not able to fix this up. So I recently launched a new pressure washing service business in the Philippines, right? This my wife's my co-founder, along with two other co-founders that I have from the P&A team, the Podcast Network Asia team. And all right, as you do specialized stuff, right? You cannot do run-of-the-mill ready to use type of stuff, especially in cleaning out there. So you really need to be able to source things out. And if you don't have anyone that's good, we struggle with this a lot. It's virtually impossible to deliver excellent service or excellent products if you have shitty materials. So again, Sourcey, super, super exciting. But before we talk about Sourcey and what you guys do and how you make that easier for all of us, Carl, I need you to buckle up real quick because I want to pick you up in Singapore, right? Or wherever you are right now. Where are you again?
So I'm actually in Hong Kong right now.
I'm just going to do a pit stop in Singapore, then go to Hong Kong. Okay. All right. Best I'm going to go that. To Hong Kong and pick you up 2 hours away because we have to go all the way back. All right, I'll pick you up in like Lang Kwai Fong. Okay. I'll see you there. Second Best corner to the left. All right. Because we're going to have to go all the way back and understand how you did your hustle prior to building Sourcey. Because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. Go. Going through the skyscraper. Here we are. Okay, there you go. Right at the corner of Sneaker Street. That's my favorite place. Nice.
Sneaker Mine Street. As well.
Right, of course. Who doesn't know? You're a weirdo if you're a dude if you don't like Sneaker Street. Come on now. Right? So, Carl, what I want to understand again before we start out is every single person, hustling is something that you learn through doing and through influence, right? What was the first exposure that you remember in hustling?
Yeah. So, I mean, sourcing is really like that one thing that is the constant across my whole career, right? Yep. So like back in, I would say my very first job when I was a management consultant, I was already doing a lot of like sourcing related work, right? Oh. Not down to the execution level like I am today, but a lot of like, you know, sourcing strategy, supply chain strategy and things like that, right? Mm. And then at the time, I just really remember that even some of the largest companies that I worked with, right? Like McDonald's, Estee Lauder, Hasbro and things like that, all had really manual sourcing functions, right? Yep. Like a lot of like Excel sheets, like flying around, you know, the email and the Excel, the number don't match. And then basically a lot of hard coding and mismanagement of the supply chain. Right. So like that was really what inspired me. I would say at the very beginning of my journey. And then I was telling myself, like, if even some of the largest companies struggle with managing sourcing, then what about Ron? Right. What about entrepreneurs?
We're on the same boat. We all struggle. It's struggle city, man. That's what it is.
Yeah, so like that's really like that kind of inspiration, right? At the very beginning, and sourcing, to be very honest, is not the sexiest function that people talk about all the time, but it's the most crucial, right? So like that's why also I was like, if I were to start something to help a business, why don't I start from something that's more crucial and fundamental?
Sounds good. So again, this is the fundamental problem that you had while you're already at work. But I want to go all the way back. So for dialing back all the way to start, right? The B1 version or version zero of you, right? So growing up in Hong Kong, right? What I love about Hong Kong is you are a basketball city. Also, there's basketball courts everywhere, right?
That's right.
They're competitive with that stuff as well. And then you have a lot of food choices that are good around. Again, the Hong Kong waffles, my favorite. The pancake waffle thing that's on the street corner. But dude, what I want to understand, right? Were you exposed to entrepreneurship or hustling early on through your parents and whatnot? And did you have any inkling at all that you wanted to be an entrepreneur growing up?
Yeah. So I think, if I really have to point to one thing that inspired me through the entire journey, I would say it was back when I was in middle school. Okay. So in Hong Kong, in what we call like Form 3, right? So basically the ninth grade in the American system, we had to pick a concentration of basically what we want to focus on at school.
Wow, that early.
Yeah. Actually, I don't even know how I made that decision, but I only remember that at the time, I really didn't like, you know, subjects like biology and, you know, chemistry and things like that. The one thing that I did like, was, economics, right? Oh. So like basically, since, form four, or 10th grade, I already started to focus on, economics, accounting, and subjects like that. And coincidentally, even though I was struggling for the most part of my middle school, I did really, really well in some of these subjects.
Nice. Right?
So that was kind of my wake-up call and also lifeline in a way. So like I was like, oh, this is the one thing that I know, right? Why don't I take advantage of that?
Right. That's God's gift right there. Because we're all you know, always given a talent. Right, in one way or another, right? If you're able to find a way to match your talent with your passion and find a way to make money out of it, man, you're going to be good. So when you always zero in, is there this your baseline skill stack in economics and numbers and whatnot? How did you push that through? Because again, I'm just going to base it off of LinkedIn. You earned out, you turned out pretty, pretty well about these things because you ended up being a master's of business administration in Wharton, in Penn, obviously, right? But how did you double down on this talent that you discovered or this circle of interest that you're in?
Yeah. I would say what you summarized was really interesting. Like, it's both talent and interest at the same time, right? And I think that's really rare. I'm a pretty nerdy guy. So it's really geeky to say that, but basically I really love thinking about economics and things like that, right? So like,
big picture.
I think, yeah, like even back in the days when I was like studying how to calculate the GDP and things like that, I was like reading a lot about like, oh, is having a lot of import really bad for a country or is it not, right? Like concepts like that. And then I think just during that period of time, I was like, you know, I'm always like reading up on all these, what we call out syllabus textbooks. So like, I just looked up a lot of these like funny thing about like economics to read up on, right? When I was still in school. And then later on when I was like, you know, deciding on what I like, my very first job out of college, right? Mm-hmm. Like the first thing that I could think of is to become a consultant. Because like, that's like the one thing that allowed me to really drill down on a lot of these basic fundamental business questions. Right. And I think about, okay, is having a high fixed cost structure good or bad for a business, right?
Right.
What is economies of scale and what is like, you know, unit economics and things like that. So like, right. I think that's very fortunately one of the area of interest that I have that I just like decided to, you know, keep developing throughout the past, you know, I don't know how many years. But I would say at the same time, this is in a way something that I truly developed only during my time as an investor, right? So like before I was like very much focusing on learning about the theories, right? And learning about like all these different ways to, for example, model a company, build a financial model and things like that. But then when I was working for the IFC, which is a private investment arm of the World Bank Group, I was like, you know, tasked to do a lot of like financial analysis, right? On companies and to decide whether or not it is a good investment opportunity. And then at the time, like it was finally all these things that I was absorbing and learning were basically put into test, right? Like I needed to use all these theories and different things that I have learned in business school or before to give a recommendation as to whether or not we should go ahead to invest in a company, right? And it is almost like, I was learning different skills, but I was finally using the skills to make decisions, right, when I became an investor. So I think that's like really one thing that I I truly cherish even today as an entrepreneur. That something that I developed over time.
Oh, that's an amazing skill stack that you've mentioned, because of course you look at the fundamentals of it all and the numbers don't lie, right? You cannot fluff that up. If you really know how to understand how the economics work from a macro point of view all the way to the littlest details in the unit echo of a company, then nobody can call it, no matter how much fluff that's put out there, yeah, things will always exactly surface out, right? That's basically your DD doing that. But I want to understand the other skill stack that you develop. So at the core of it all, now I understand how you also look at every single detail. But as you progressed in your career, say again, after being in Wharton, you've also been a management consultant. And again, you work for World Bank and the IFC. What other skills did you develop through that time that again has probably helped you into this? Because you already mentioned like sourcing stuff out. In a world of consultants, consultancy, you cannot be an island. Because I don't care if you have the best numbers, this thing needs to make sense. This will be presented to I don't know what you call it, like the IC of a company like this, right? Probably similar structure than a VC, but you gotta do some persuasion along with the numbers. Of course, the numbers won't lie, but there's a human component to this. What are the skills that you develop over time?
Yeah, for sure. I would say, like when I was in, you know, as I was mentioning, middle school, in uni, in business school, and even as a management consultant, right? I was learning a lot of theories, and all these theories are basically about, okay, what constitute a good business, right? But then a lot of these theories are also quite academic in nature. Correct. And until you see an actual business and try to apply all these onto it, you never get to really fully appreciate what the theories are about, right? So I think the one thing that I learned and I truly value is really this very context specific type of analysis approach, right? Mm. So like basically applying all these theories onto a specific industry or a specific company, knowing that there may not be an absolute right or wrong answer, and then try to formulate using all these different theories my own point of view, right? My own conviction on a business idea. I think that's like this, the art aspect of it, right? Like if the first part of my career was learning about the science of doing a business, then the second part is really about learning the art aspect.
Now, here's what I wanted to, before we take our first break. When did you start getting drawn into the other side? Because I know a few, this happens a lot for people that start out in management consulting, right? And they go macro, they understand how to look at companies, but somewhere along the line, something turns on as a switch where entrepreneurship draws you to be on the other side. When did that itch start to manifest itself?
Yeah, I would say it was when you witnessed firsthand, after weeks and sometimes months of analysis, right?
Yeah.
The final impact that you could make is all boiled down to the PowerPoint, right? Like, I think that's like kind of like one of those wake up calls moment when you see, okay, I spent, you know, really, really months of hard work, tears and sweats, right? And then ultimately, I created this one PowerPoint that the decision makers probably would never read again, right? Yep. After the presentation. And I think this is one of those moments when I felt like, okay, if I really want to make an impact per se, right? It is really not the way to go. Consulting taught me a lot about thinking about, you know, a business, a lot about like analyzing business, but never about like doing a business, right? And if I really want to make that happen, I still need to, you know, jump to the other side and then try to build something from scratch. So I think that's really the wake up moment for me.
And within this process, again, I think the problem, you already mentioned it earlier, that while you were management consulting, you always had a problem of sourcing things out. So this is personal to you. This is a problem that you encountered a lot. But talk to me about the problem that of what were you even sourcing out in management consulting? Because of course, I've seen people say in PE source out other stuff because of course private equity firms operate differently than a VC backed firm. They either are operating once they acquire and they're part of the boat, or they're arm's length and they're just saying, "Hey, you need to make more money," right? But what is a person in management consulting, especially in the lens of someone in IFC as an investor, what were you even sourcing out?
Yeah, so I can give you an example, right? Okay. Like we were basically helping, when I was a management consultant, I was basically in a team helping this global consumer good company streamlining its sourcing function, right? Like product sourcing. So actually like finding a supplier to manufacture a product, right? And then what I did at the time was basically to map out from the very high level, what are the key procedures down to what we call at the time, a level 4, level 5, level 6 type of activities, right? Whoa. So down to when the operation executive is supposed to turn on the computer, you know, open up this certain spreadsheet and then, you know, input a number, right? So like down to the very granular level. And then we realized, okay, actually, if we were to redesign everything from scratch, 80% of the level 4, level 5, level 6 right. should be removed, right? In order to make it like 1,000 times more efficient.
Right.
But the reality is you can't, right? Because like there is like people are used to how things are being done already. There's an SOP in place. People are kind of resistant to change. And somehow, even as one of the leading consumer good company, they have to live with such an inefficient feature, function in their sourcing arm, right? So like, I think that was really like one of those moments when you want to adopt like first principle thinking, right? If we really redesign everything from scratch and try to come up with the best idea to solve this problem, it would be nothing like how they're doing it right now. But as a management consultant, you can always make like incremental changes here and there. Maybe instead of opening up two spreadsheets, you will open up one. Like those kind of like very marginal recommendations, right? So like, I think ultimately like it is a huge inefficiency, but at the same time, it's a huge business opportunity, right? If we can build up a new tool that can help companies source very efficiently, then that's the value that we can unlock is huge.
Correct.
So yeah, that's where
it's an easier buy-in once you already have built that product, because you're literally solving problems from people that experience that problem constantly, right? And that sourcing problem is the common denominator across multiple levels. Is that correct?
Yeah. I would say it is one of those pain points where you can't really solve by incremental changes. You really have to solve it by revolutionizing the entire operations, right? Because the existing status quo is just so inefficient. And all these like different processes are so convoluted in a way. The easiest way to solve the problem is by going back to the drawing board and redesigning from zero how this should be done. Right. So that's a lot of what we're doing right now at Sourcy.
Sounds good. So it's literally, again, in a way, doing an internal penetration and understanding, hey, all right, we're gonna infiltrate you a little bit. But in the end, once this baby is out, this should make X amount of increment, not even incremental changes. This will literally change the whole way you operate overnight.
Yeah, it's almost like a all or nothing type of situation. Hard to make incremental changes, but it's actually easier to make fundamental changes.
Got it. Sounds good. Now let's take our first break, and when we come back, we will now talk about how did this problem evolve to becoming a startup, and what was that process like when you officially took the jump from the management consultant side to become a 0-to-1 founder. Well, let's talk about that more after the break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back in the break. We are still with Carl Chen, who then taught us the etymology of why the sourcing is the problem that they wanted to solve. So again, you already mentioned how vital or how big this problem is and how you cannot really solve it with incremental changes because it really doesn't move the needle, right? You kind of have to do a complete overhaul of this system. But how did this become something that you were just trying to probably, because some people will probably just solve this out from, say, a consultant's point of view, be in their arm's length position and say, hey, this is the playbook, execute it. How did you then trigger, like, all right, I'm the one to solve this problem. I'm going to create this company, and this is how I'm going to do it. How did that happen?
Well, yeah. I mean, the reality is, as a consultant, you can only solve so many problems, right? You can only work with so many customers at the same time. But if we build a true productized version of everything that I was doing in management consulting, then that's scalable. Right, then the impact that we can, I can make personally would be exponentially greater than if I were a consultant. Right, I think that's just the reality. And then what prompted me to think, oh, do I really want to work with, like, let's say 3 to 4 clients a year, or do I want to work with like hundreds, if not thousands, of customers a year? Right, I think that was a no brainer for me.
Got it. So if it's a no-brainer, how did you then prepare yourself to turn that into a company? Because obviously you cannot do this alone, right? This is some behemoth of a problem, and every single behemoth company that has this problem has multiple layers on it. You cannot do this alone. How did you turn that into a team, and how did you build your first product?
Yeah, yeah. So we started really, really small. Right. Yeah. So even though we were talking about productizing it and making it scalable, I'm actually a big fan of what Paul Graham from Y Combinator used to say, right?
Doing
build things that don't scale.
Yes.
Yeah. We started there. We basically tried to do the MVP version of what I was doing in management consulting, right? Mm-hmm. So what is the bare minimal value that we need to deliver to our customers so that they will really enjoy using Sourcy as a company or as a product? Right. And then we did a lot of explorations and experimentations. So we tried to tackle the inefficiency from different perspectives, right? Like we thought a lot about whether it is actually a discovery problem, where customers cannot find the right suppliers, or is it more like a search problem, right? Where customers actually are presented too many options and they don't know which one solving their problem the best, right? So like we try out a lot of different combinations of that. And then finally we realize it is for the most part a discovery problem, right? Yes. So like it's really hard for entrepreneurs and buyers to understand what are some of the options out there, right? Like when people source, they still primarily go to Alibaba most of the time.
Yep.
And then when they go to Alibaba, they're presented with, kind of like a boiling the ocean type of experience, right? Like you have 20 different entries of exactly the same product. You don't know how they are similar or how they are different. And the entire decision-making process is, if not painful, very tedious, right? Then what we decided to do is actually to take it in and then simplify the decision-making and recommend very specific options based on what we understand our customers want, right? So like we basically give a very curated recommendation in the sourcing experience rather than presenting everything under the sun, right? So like that's like when we realize, okay, this is the biggest pain point that's still on the market that even big companies like Alibaba are not echoing well.
Right.
So like that's how we started to narrow down our product development. That's how I understood what people I should be hiring. And that's how we translated that idea into a company.
So if you were doing this in a way that it didn't scale, that means you're doing this, like you're concierging the whole process in a bit, right? Because MVP is like, all right, here you go. This is my value proposition. You're going to pay me for this. We're going to put you in a nice landing page or what's of some sort, but a lot of the hustling is going to be done manually. Now, obviously, eventually you turn that into a product as well, but the skill of sourcing this out, you need to be borderline CIA or FBI to be able to to be able to source out these things. So how did you guys develop that? And who were the people helping you guys? Because I can imagine this will take a lot of time. And I would assume, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of these sourcing inquiries have a very tight deadline of when they need those products. So there's always a gun in your head when you need to sell. You cannot take a whole week and give me two options, right? You need to be able to do that fast. How were you guys able to get that done behind the hood?
Yeah. So actually, like you're totally right. At the very beginning, we were basically struggling, right, with a lot of these inbound requests that we got from the customers. And we had too many customers for us to even try serve at once, right?
Yeah.
I think what we realized, however, is that a lot of these decision making are actually quite standardized, meaning customers want to have like options that are slightly more premium. They want to have options that are better value for money. They want to be presented everything in a very neat and orderly manner. They want to know if they get this product from the port, how much is that going to cost? They want to know if they get the product at the warehouse, right? How much is that going to cost? So basically, we first solve this problem by standardizing the decisions, the micro decisions that are embedded in the entire sourcing process, right? Wow. And then once we have mapped out the different decisions, that are spread throughout the whole process, we can then basically build an automated workflow for each of these micro decisions, one at a time, right? And what is truly funny here is we need a little bit from both the buyer and the supplier's perspective, right? So like even though for Sourcy, our customers are the buyers, right? So we are helping the buyers source more efficiently.
Right.
At the same time, we need to be able to appreciate why our suppliers are sometimes also struggling with the whole process, right? So we also need to solve the problem from the supplier's perspective. So that led us to our people strategy, right? Like we need people who understand the downstream, but also people who understand the upstream, right? And it is almost funny because sometimes internally, those two groups of people also have a lot of tension, right?
And I can imagine there's a big dichotomy out of this.
Exactly. They're coming from very different
people.
Yeah, like imagine if a merchant in Makati is struggling to negotiate with a factory in Dongguan, right?
Yeah.
Then our growth team, who are thinking from the customer's perspective, are also sometimes struggling to work with our ops team, right? To define what are some of the product features that we need to develop. Should we be more buyer friendly or seller friendly? But we like the fact that we're insourcing these different diversity of thinking, right? And then by introducing all these into our product development process, while we are productizing all those like micro decisions throughout the entire sourcing process, we're basically insourcing, right? All these different thinking, and then transforming all of these thinking from both the buyer perspective and the seller perspective into finally a user experience that makes sense to both sides, both the buyer side and the supplier side.
That is amazing. Now, okay, I can imagine, of course, there's going to be a lot of stuff that you can have access to being in Hong Kong and Shenzhen and whatnot, having that pathway towards the China, or you'd be able to source things out. But a lot of those probably are not even in the internet. So how is there a manual networking process of really finding out all of these suppliers of who to get where and whatnot? How are you able to source that out behind the hood? Or is it all just in the internet and us people coming in from the outside looking in just don't really know how to navigate this freely?
Yeah, we scrape the internet, right? To begin with, I think that's always the step number one, because we know we need a baseline, right? To begin with, so we basically if there is a supplier on the internet, we would be able to find a supplier, right? So like we build different programs to be able to download all these supplier and catalog information from different sites, but at the same time, there are a lot of specific products that are only made by suppliers that are not online yet, right? So like every time when we work with a customer and we realize, for this particular product, we can't really find a good options out of all the suppliers that we have already onboarded, we would then go out to specifically hunt for those suppliers. Right. And interestingly, some of those suppliers might be, from a place like Bali, right? Or in, you know, like, Korea or in Taiwan. Like they can be from all sorts of places. But as long as we understand, what the, requirements are, we are always able to find a good option. Sometimes through the internet or sometimes through like a more, personalized, network.
That's good. That's amazing. So, all right. So again, just a lot of this literally is a lot of hustling that you're going to have to do, because whether it's through networking, through the internet, you're going to have to be determined to be able to search for that treasure, or especially if you have a very tight deadline. I want to understand now from a buyer point of view, right? Of course, some people will be like, I can probably do this and hire someone to get this done. But what does the business model entail now in you doing this for the buyer? And how much do you typically, or how do you make money in that process?
Yeah. So basically, our mission is really to help our buyers manage thousands of suppliers at the same time, right? So our approach is that we don't want to be a marketplace. We don't want to, as I was mentioning earlier, outsource that decision making to our customers, right? We want Sourcy to become the official seller of record. And as long as you're buying from Sourcy, you know that it is of high quality and it has a good price.
Got it.
Right. So basically what we do is from a buyer perspective, you come to Sourcy, you let us know through our sourcing requirement form, like what exactly are you looking for, right? You can drop a pictures in there. We would take that into account. And then based on that, we would curate from all this supply information that we have collected, which of the product would be the best fit based on your requirement. And then we're going to present those products to you with what we call a delivered duties paid price, right? A DDP price. So like from the buyer perspective, it's almost like magical. Like you let us know what you want. And then very shortly, you will be presented with the options that meet exactly what you're looking for. And then you can buy it right away. And then you get the products in your warehouse at your doorstep, right? So the entire experience is almost like kind of like a B2C experience that we're trying to bring to businesses. Or in a way, we're kind of like consumerizing the entire business sourcing process.
Got it. All right. That's amazing. Now, okay. Obviously, you came from the VC world, but okay, you already have this client, you have this product. How were you then able to find the resources to get? You had a cheat code, man. You're on the other side. You're from the IFC. So you easily know how to unlock the funding out of this. But how are you able to raise funding for Sourcey to get this up?
Yeah. I think one thing about Sourcey is we're solving a huge problem, right? And I think it is like probably for other businesses out there that are trying to raise money from venture capital, the first thing that they had to prove, right, is the market size, right? How pervasive is the problem, right, that they are trying to tackle. For Sourcey, we almost don't have to prove that because like this problem is so validated and so documented, very pervasive across the globe, right? Everyone knows that. And if they don't, they can just go to Alibaba and try to buy something. And then when they come back, they would know. It is really not a good experience. So I think tackling a very, very pervasive problem makes us very interesting to some of the venture capital firms out there. And then, of course, at the same time, we are trying to really build a very scalable productized solution, right, out of a very manual process. Yeah. We are trying to use a lot of generative AI technology, be it, you know, like using GPT to streamline the communication, or using some image generation technology to create like design mockup and things like that. So like just by embedding all these like new interesting development in AI into the very manual sourcing process, right, makes us a very interesting proposition to some of the VCs out there.
All right. Now let's take our last break. And when we come back, we will not talk about how they were actually able to acquire customers on the demand side. And what's next for Sourcey, and you know, how will they change the game and give us more sourcing that we need in the near future. But let's talk about that more after the break. Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh, payroll-starter-monthly-5K, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals.
You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and loans. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey, hustlers. I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, DragonPay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, DragonPay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. DragonPay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit DragonPay is. DragonPay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust DragonPay. And we're back to break. We are still with Carl Chan that told us the amazing journey of how they're actually able to source things out. Because again, this is such a hard problem to do, right? But not everybody can afford this. There are going to be SMEs that are like, I want to, but Carl, it's out of my league, right? This is how. What's the sweet spot of the companies that you guys typically source? Because you mentioned, you're already, back when you were consulting, you're talking about like this billion-dollar brands that we're talking about. So they easily have a budget to get this done. The fact that they can actually hire a management consultant says that a lot, right? But in your perspective, when you created Sourcy, you didn't want to start with just 4 companies when you were management consulting. You wanted to do this, solve this problem at scale. But what would that look like in the demand side? And how do you even acquire them to follow on?
Yeah, so the way to answer this question is always through experimentation, right? Okay. So like at the very beginning, we were not picky about like who we want to work with, right? Okay. We really try to acquire some big customers, some mom and pop shops, and some in between, right? And then we just basically test out really like the unit economics, what is the ARPU, and what is the cost of acquisition. Right. And then we realize for the bigger guys, they have a huge in-house sourcing team and they're not necessarily very excited about, you know, using an external platform like Sourcy.
They hate you guys. There you go.
And even if they do, they are very, very price sensitive. And there's a huge and like complicated compliance and KYC process. Right. So it makes the entire sales cycle excessively long.
Ooh-wee.
And, yeah, and also, they're going to be the blocker. They don't want you because they probably see you as a threat.
Exactly, exactly. The in-house like sourcing director, right? They would be like, oh, why would I want to hire a platform?
F these guys. No.
To threaten my own job, right? So like not the big guys. And then the smaller guys, really like when we're talking about like a kind of like a social seller or a mom and pop shop, like they are very eager to use us. But at the same time, like they are pretty hard to serve and they are not necessarily generating a lot of revenue.
Nope, not yet.
So I think just by sheer kind of following the money kind of approach, we realize like we can't serve the small guys. We can't serve the big guys. We have to serve somewhere in between, right?
So
there are a lot of startups that we're working with. There are a lot of basically venture capital funded businesses, be it direct to consumer brands or retail players. There are some old school retail players as well. Like offline, you know, department store type of retail chains, but not that big runs, right? Like, as long as we don't get into like kind of like a conglomerate type of level of customers, and we don't get down to the mom and pop shop, right? The sweet spot is everything in between.
Got it. Sounds good. Now, when you're at that sweet spot or that Goldilocks zone, how do you even acquire them? Because again, it can easily skew over and it's hard to kind of define like, all right, this is the sweet spot. Do you qualify them? Do you do a pre-qualification? Do you do a bit of your own KYC before like, all right, this is the perfect one? And this is a lot of BD hustling, man. This is pipeline gaming, old school B2B stuff. So how do you even acquire this at scale?
Yeah, I would actually say at the very beginning, it was very easy for us to get customers just because a lot of our customers were really struggling with the options that they had, right? Because like honestly, the only option that was relevant at the time was Alibaba, and no one really enjoyed the experience sourcing from Alibaba. Mm-hmm. So like I think the first kind of like 10 to 20 customers were actually rather easy to acquire because they were the most desperate customers as well, right? But then when we continue to scale, one thing that we realize is we can't just rely on like warm introductions, referrals, and inbound, right? Which we still appreciate, but in order to grow the business, we need to do a bit more like active acquisition. So we have done a lot of BDs, as you said, like we identify some strategic sectors like F&B and the like to acquire customers. We also do some digital marketing, targeting some keywords that are relevant to, for example, finding suppliers, importing products. Mm-hmm. And then through that, we get a lot of leads as well. So like right now, I would say it's pretty evenly split, between warm intro, referral, inbound, number one, number two, outbound marketing, mm-hmm. business development, and number three, more like SEM, digital marketing type of lead.
I have a feeling a lot of the people that would probably use Sourcey are HustleShare listeners. Per se, because again, a lot of people that listen to this are entrepreneurs, right? But I want to understand, right? I'm asking as a consumer, because I probably need this too for Papa Pressure, my other thing. What does the damage look like? How much does it cost to use Sourcey? Because I'm already sold. Like, all right, I think we have enough funding to get this baby off the ground, but what's the number like? Is this something like, or am I the mom and pop that is too small to be able to afford the Sourcey right
yeah,
now?
So,
what does that look like?
So we try to charge an all-in price that's compatible to what you would be paying anyways if you were to go direct, right? Because like one benefit of Sourcey is that we do have a bit of volume. We have quite a bit of logistics going on, and we can optimize the cost structure pretty well, right? So like basically, in a way, if you're working with Sourcey, you are saving, let's say around 10% of the all-in cost. And then we are basically charging a bit of margin on top to make it more like a break even, right? And then at the same time, what you're also enjoying is a consolidated supply chain, right? So like you have only one single platform, one single window for your supply management, rather than talking to hundreds of suppliers yourself, right? So like I think we are basically in a way giving you the same product at the same price and taking away all the hassles, right? So that's how we market our products.
That is amazing. Again, thank you so much, Carl. But again, I'm not going to let you go without telling people how you're actually going to be. What are two things I want to know? What's next for Sourcey? Because again, very, very exciting. It's still pretty new, but man, the way you've been killing it, and you've been doing this forever while you're a management consultant, it's inevitable. You're going to get there eventually. But what's up next for you guys in Sourcey?
Yeah, so as I was saying, right, we started off with a MVP version of Sourcey. And so far, even with the MVP version, we are able to add some value to some customers. But we don't want to stop there, right? We really want to become the best sourcing platform that's available in the entire world. So like right now, what we're really doing is introducing a lot of generative AI here and there. So we want to make it almost like a seamless digital assistant. Like think of us as like a management consultant, doing everything for you. But also at the same time, doing everything in a more data-driven and better way.
And right?
So like that's what we aspire to become, a fully productized and data-driven AI-powered sourcing platform.
An AI Carl Chan, technically.
Fall in love with sourcing, yes.
Right, that's amazing. And again, Carl, if they are sold just like I am, right, where do they go and how do they reach out to you if they need stuff sourcing out? From around the world.
So just come to sourcey.ai, sourcey.ai, and then you will be able to see a very, very simple sourcing form that you can fill out, right? Or if you really want to hit me up, always up for, you know, a coffee or something, carlchan@sourcey.global.com.
Or a Xiaolong Bao somewhere. Random. There you go. Okay. Now, before I let you go, Carl, thank you so much. But follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever you listen to podcasts. If we did say some jargon or any links or notes that we talk about, you don't have to write that down while you're driving. You can just chill out because it's going to be the show notes on hustleshare.com. If you want to also support HustleShare, just like our premium supporters, just like Angelo Lee, all the brands that support us, you are welcome to hop on and support us as well at premium.hustleshare.com. Again, thank you so much, Carl. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Ron.
And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace. We'll be right back.